For March the 28th, 2014, we talk about all the stuff that's happening with the Oculus Rift. We ask you which games you wish you could play for the first time again. And then we meticulously avoid discussing any kind of video games whatsoever. Welcome to the 55th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. That's right, David is not with us because espionage. You think I'm joking, but not really.
I would tell you more, but David will kill me.
Yeah. he's got a bug out bag.
Exactly.
I think his ninja shurikens to Deutschmarks ratio is a little bit off. But then I realized, they haven't used Deutschmarks for 12 years. So, I think that no bug out bag is complete without a compliment of about how you look today. No, a compliment of foreign currencies, a la Jason Bourne.
Yeah. Well, and he is a time espionage type of person, so he might need those Deutschmarks.
Yeah, time espionage sounds like a manuscript that is way, way at the bottom of Philip K. Dick's like armoire. It's like lining some kind of drawer. Time espionage. What can we do here?
Tom Clancy really got off to a rough start. Have you read some of his early stuff?
No, I haven't.
Time espionage was not that great.
No. A lot of plot holes, which is the risk that you run when you're talking about time traveling and the KGB. Fun fact, he thought that the KGB would exist in 2015. Not really. I don't know. That sounds like something that would be true about Tom Clancy, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
The dude knew incredible, like he was just incredible at researching. And there were literally some things he published in his book that the government called him like, you are in trouble. You should not have those secrets. Like, we need to identify your source. And he's like, no, seriously, I just went on like this website and I researched this thing. And like, it is public information.
Yeah.
So things they probably did not intend to be public information. So,
yeah. There's this thing in not to get political, but there's this thing in the Bush era where like they would bring in like people from the media. Like to be on like these, you know, think tanks or councils or whatever. So it's like Tom Clancy and a bunch of the people from like 24 talking about how like the Libyans were gonna get time machines or something like that. And it's like really like that. Like we have a lot of like really smart and like, you know, qualified thinkers on this stuff. And you're bringing in like the dude who wrote The Sum of All Fears. to some small extent dictate policy.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a little gross.
You know, they need a little comic relief to keep it light, so they just they brought him in to lighten things up.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I have some exciting news for you guys. Bio, okay. that's what I call him. Reached out to us to be consultants on various matters, both domestic and foreign. Yeah,
good. I think we really have some value to add.
You know, we have deep catalog, especially as regards like the Central Europe. I would say, that's where a good deal of our expertise kind of like lies. It's the cradle of our bailiwick. So,
yeah, I would say particularly. Oh, go ahead.
No, I wouldn't blame you for like not knowing where to go from this. Like, the truth is, I haven't played shit.
Trying to pad the time.
Just a little bit. Like, otherwise, like I don't know what you guys played, but like it's gonna get to me, and it's gonna be like, oh yeah, like I have to pass. So like I need to get my time in with just some of my usual frivolous like frippery.
Yeah, my strategy was going to be to start talking about our fart joke policy and making sure that was updated to reflect the latest changes in Syria. But I don't know if that had any legs or not.
Have I expressly laid out what my policy on fart jokes is?
Do you have one?
No, I don't. But like I generally feel that it's lazy but not in the way that people say that, like, oh, swearing is lazy because you just can't think up the right word. To which I say, mm-hmm. I mean, fuck, I don't know. No, but it's like, I don't understand what is inherently okay. The one time farts have ever been funny to me in my adult life is every time I rewatch Blazing Saddles. That scene where the cowboys are sitting around the campfire eating beans, and it's 3 minutes of just dudes farting, possibly one of the funniest moments in cinema ever.
See, that's it's one of those things where, like, you know, okay, anything that you're exposed to long enough in large enough quantities will give you cancer. And any joke, no matter how unfunny, done long enough in large enough quantities will become funny.
I mean, otherwise, like, what are we doing here? What's our purpose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. No, I mean, 54 episodes isn't enough to get funny. I guess we just need to do 54 more.
Yeah.
No. So if we do pre-roll long enough, it'll get funny then?
Oh, we're still in the intro. We haven't even gotten to the section breaks. This is a long and crazy ride. No, but so at that point, the farts aren't the joke, right? Like, just the entire transgressive mode of Blazing Saddles is the joke. I mean, when Sheriff Bart holds himself up, like, I mean, come on, like, just like that, how forward thinking was that movie? Just like, oh my gosh, just calling out people on their bullshit in like 1976. You know, like, oh man, just I could do a whole show on just Blazing Saddles alone. But I think that, like, the farting cowboys scene is bolstered by the idea that when they show the initial TV cut of Blazing Saddles, they change the soundtrack to cut out the farts. So when
what?
People
when what are pe- they doing?
When people no, it's a bunch of cowboys sitting around and silently eating beans for somewhere between 3 and 4 minutes of runtime.
It's just awkward.
Here's the thing. No. Syria finds that hilarious, and that's why we need to update our policy.
Oh, okay. Cool. Oh, so you're saying this can be like an olive branch?
I'm saying it's a cultural thing, okay? Humor is cultural.
No, definitely. I mean,
if we're going to be consultants on policy in the EU, we need to account for Syrian fart jokes, are silent but deadly.
Okay. Wait a minute. Okay.
All right.
I keep it here at the ready. I try not to use it so much, but it's still here, and I make a show of searching for it every time, even though my hand is always resting on a disassembled bell.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm trying to reconcile that picture with the fact that it kind of will go off accidentally sometimes.
Yep. Well, no, it's because I'm in the process of disassembling it and reassembling it.
Ah, okay. There we go.
Yeah. So like I said, it's always in my hand in some form or fashion. It's right here, and I make a show of that delay because it builds the tension, and I'm revealing too much of this joke.
No, I'm telling you, dude, the tombstone is going to have to read, "Here lies Cole Ross, quote, where's my bell?"
Oh, man. Thank you, Merlin. So anyway, let's see here. What do we have in store besides Blazing Saddle? I mean, I could continue the Blazing Saddle talk. I mean, like,
I just need to go back and watch it again.
Oh, you seriously do. So, like, there are a couple of, like, you know, trains of thought as regards, like, Mel Brooks movies. And I'm in constant conflict with these Philistines who insist that Spaceballs is the best is the best Mel Brooks movie. Because it's quite clearly like an almost even tie between Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, with maybe the History of the World Part One like riding quickly on the coattails. I heard someone at work today, like not today. Okay, not today. Every day is today because time is utterly meaningless. But I heard somebody at work genuinely assert that Dracula Dead and Loving It was one of their favorite Mel Brooks movies, and I was aghast.
Yeah. Not sure how I feel about that. So Young Frankenstein was my first Mel Brooks movie.
Okay.
Before I even knew what a Mel Brooks movie was and what it stood for. Mm-hmm. And that was just such a revelation that my heart is kind of predisposed. I'm biased towards Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. I would say that Putting on the Ritz is probably the best scene in the Young Frankenstein movie.
Oh, what about Put the Candle Back?
Yeah.
I stand by my putting on the Reds.
Oh, it's great. I mean, Peter Boyle, come the fuck on. Like, Peter Boyle is a mastermind.
Oh, yeah. The one thing I love, I don't know if you guys ever listen to Car Talk, but they are still running the Frobluther wee joke into the ground.
They've been doing that for, like, what, 30 years?
Yo, easily.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, no, I don't know. I love Young Frankenstein because I love the movies that it imitates just so deftly. And I genuinely think that, like, Blazing Saddles is some of the best cultural commentary and most relevant even still today.
Yeah, he does some good work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some good work.
Yeah, let's do some good work. So we're not here to talk about Mel Brooks's oeuvre. We're here to talk about video games. Damn it. And it's going to be so it's going to be the usual format. It's going to be the brief where we talk about video game news. We're going to go to multiplayer with a question that Ben suggested about that first time and if you could revisit it playing a particular game. And then rounding everything out with a discussion of what we ourselves have been playing and enjoying. So how do you guys feel about getting this thing going?
Let's do it.
It is time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world of video games around us. If nobody has a story, I have kind of a suite of stories arranged around a theme and an accidental bell. Bring you a variety of stories around this theme here today on the level. So I guess that's my way of saying I'm going to go first, and you guys are going to have to, like, fight me.
I won't fight
through
you.
The internet. We will just trade snide comments.
I suppose we're going to fight in a field.
You, Cole, you talk, and Ben and I are going to, like, just diss you in the chat.
Oh. Okay, so this is actually, like, late breaking news because this happened today. For those of you who do not know, we record on Tuesdays and then release this on a Friday to give that nice little edit buffer. But here today, it was announced that Facebook is going to be putting in an offer and is in the process of buying Oculus Rift for $2 billion.
That's my story.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. No, okay. So yeah, yeah. We can camp out here for a little bit because there are, like, a bunch of stories that kind of surround this, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they bought Instagram for, like, what was it, $1 billion?
I don't know what they bought Instagram for. They bought WhatsApp for $19 billion.
Yeah, for $19 billion, and, like, nobody knows what WhatsApp is.
That's why they had to have it. It was the mystery. Zuckerberg's just like, what is it?
Is it like
I must know.
Is it like a Kinder egg? I have to get inside this. I have to figure out
there's an app inside.
We will sell you WhatsApp and whatever's in this wooden box for $19 billion.
Well, it could be anything.
It could be anything, even $19 billion.
Yeah, we just doubled our investment. Oh, man. So Oculus co-founder and CEO Brendan Iribe said, "We're excited to work with Mark and the Facebook team to deliver the very best virtual reality platform in the world. We believe that virtual reality will be heavily defined by social experiences that connect people in magical new ways. Phone sex. It is a transformative and disruptive technology that enables the world to experience the impossible, and it's only the beginning. Mr. Lebowski, we're expanding our horizons. We are developing new technology in teledildonics."
Yes.
How's the smut business, Jackie? I wouldn't know. I'm in the adult entertainment. I could keep going. We should really do a movie podcast. I feel like there's a lot of wasted opportunity in talking about the 7 bands that I know and maybe the 15 movies I watch on repeat every 2 months. So
it's a very niche podcast, but it's got a very loyal following.
Yeah, of me.
Namely, Cole, Dennis, Ben.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, what does buying the Oculus Rift have to do with collecting data about people? Other than, like, how quickly does your neck get fatigued? Which ties directly to, like, which brand of detergent you use.
Yeah, so I know Zuckerberg released, like, a a press release about buying it. But yeah, some of the plans he talked about was like integrating it into games that are already on Facebook somehow.
Yeah, because Facebook is known for like really, really graphically rich experiences.
Yeah, right. Yep.
You can look at your Farmville now and walk around in it, right? Yeah.
It seems so at odds because like the Oculus Rift to me like represents like the possibility for immersion. I'm like, yeah, it's a gimmick waiting for justification. But like the MO for it is immersion, but the MO for Facebook is distraction.
And casual games.
That's gross.
It's guys, it's not gonna be a timeline anymore. It's gonna be a time plane.
Whoa.
What?
You just drop some geometric science on us.
No, I honestly believe that they're to the point where they just buy things they're interested in. Like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. Let's pick that up. Have some fun. Throw it in a hackathon.
That's like Google.
Yeah.
Google seems much more sinister there. It's like, we're buying robotic companies. We're buying AI.
Yeah.
what is that, Boston Dynamics or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Who's like, oh, that's
But the fact
cute.
That they're
we
buying, like,
say.
They're buying all of the AI robotic companies, it's like, well, that's not a good sign.
Okay, so it's web search, advertising, and all of the robots.
They're still not evil.
Oh, that's been a joke for years. there's a fantastic segment on the Idle Thumbs podcast called Robot News, where they've been following the happenings in the growing the growing dissolution of the human race for a good long time now, and they have some very amusing thoughts on the matter. But do you have any more information about what Mark Zuckerberg said about like the fact that they bought a headset?
No, it's just like a lot of kind of, no offense, Dennis, but like marketing and kind of like, I don't know, vacuous statements. So
the Rift is highly anticipated by the gaming community.
It's a lot of bad marketing.
Yeah.
Yes.
It just seems muddy, you know, like I value companies that focus, you know, like, oh, like we do this thing and just like. All that I can read into this is an ulterior motive. I mean, I made that joke about like how quickly your neck gets fatigued, but you know,
did mention that they were going to operate independently within Facebook, but who knows?
Yeah. After games, we're going to make the Oculus a platform for many other experiences. Imagine enjoying a courtside seat at a game, studying in a classroom of students and teachers all over the world, or consulting with a doctor face-to-face just by putting on goggles in your home. Gross, 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 gross!
Yeah. Did you see,
the thing is how...
We'll, go ahead.
How could, like, the doctor thing, how could that operate two ways, you know? Like, they're just going to be staring at a camera and talking to that, you know?
That's, like, a thing, though. Like virtual video conference doctor exams are like, a thing that is happening.
Well, yeah, but it makes more sense with something like FaceTime or something like that, you know?
Yeah. As opposed to...
It will be literal FaceTime.
I don't see why you need immersion to that degree as opposed to, you know... Just being able to see one another, you know.
Well, what if you're trying to get a second opinion about your missing head? Womp.
Yeah. That,
yeah. Did you see there was some Oculus Rift experiment that was really weird, where like they had a guy put on the Oculus Rift that was linked up to a girl with like a camera position where the girl's eyes were, and the girl did the same thing position where the guy's eyes were. It was like one of those improv experiences where you're like agreeing to mirror each other's actions, and it's not clear like who's instigating what actions, etc.
Yeah.
And so it was like supposed to emulate being, you know, in someone else's body. It was just a race to see who would start taking off clothes first, essentially.
there was a fantastic article on Polygon by Ben Kuchera about that, and just like the goal of it is to give people a perspective on what it's like to nominally inhabit the body of another gender. Which I see a little bit of a disconnect there, but it's an interesting idea at the very least. Yeah, and it's weird because like that kind of innovation is like what it okay, that kind of innovation. Sorry, I need to like remove myself from that from that language. Like those cool little experiential experiments are like what's interesting about that. It's not so much like, yeah, I'd be excited to play like a horror game on those and just be like terrified out of my mind by playing Outlast on it or something, you know?
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, excited is an interesting word to describe it.
Yeah, no, just like it would be kind of cool for me as a person who, you know, who is enthusiastic about those kind of games that really do benefit from immersion and atmosphere, like, you know, like to be surrounded by those worlds. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of cool. But it's like, okay, you know, like when the Oculus is first announced, like somebody just said, oh, like what if we like made you like understand, or, you know, or like tried to put you in the position of somebody who was going through a guillotine, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you put this thing on and you put your head over the little rail, and then we like have somebody like hit your neck, and then then we move the camera, and it's like, oh, my head's rolling. Ah, pretty neat. Like, that's not a game, but so like that. Go ahead.
It would be like the beginning of Skyrim.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So like that kind of cool little novelty experience. Like I said, it is something kind of neat. It's a gimmick. A gimmick that is waiting for a really good, like, solid idea that could bear out a whole experience. But like, this is innovation in a wrong way. It's not innovating towards making those kind of experiences. And that isn't to say that people aren't still going to get a hold of these things, and they're not going to, you know, continue to do that. You know, it might even be, you know, easier or more like better, but easier or more better. God, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought so quickly. But like, it might be easier for them to like develop for it if they have the full weight of, you know, both Facebook and John Carmack behind it. Like, what I see is like that kind of like cool boutique stuff being drowned out by like, oh, now you can be front row center for what is a reality TV show that people watch. Gator Bros. Now you can be front row center for Gator Bros and like, you know, tweet to all your friends that you totally like this. And no, you're not marketing for this other thing. You're totally just saying, I like this show. And you're not like being monetized or used because you, because you've been conned into, oh God, so gross. Ugh, filthy.
That's the key word there is monetized. Is the you know, I think all these cool experiments will still happen, but they'll be, you know, in some corporate lab where, great, they'll have plenty of funding, but they'll, you know, only the most benign and monetizable ones will ever see the light of day.
Yeah.
And everything else will just kind of file away under Facebook IP protected. That will never, you know, never actually happen.
Yeah. Well, hope, I mean, the best case scenario is they don't lose their soul and they just kind of say, yep, okay, like we're owned by Facebook now, but we retain enough of our independence to enable developers to develop independently, right? And those ideas still get made. Go ahead, Ben.
I was not going to say anything.
Oh, I thought I heard somebody. I thought I heard you breathing to speak. So.
I'll say I for my perspective is that the Oculus Rift has, you know, jumped the shark. And I only wish there was another device like it that maybe came from a company that had good track record with indies.
before you do that, because that is related to this. This will just be like an all VR brief, but in response to this, Notch, the developer of Minecraft, decided to pull out. Initially, back when the Oculus was announced, he was like, "Oh, I'm very excited to make a version of this that supports the Oculus Rift," but he said, "I just canceled the deal. Facebook creeps me out." So, like, I can see, like the indie community is pretty fickle. Like, they know where their moral compass is, and they're averse to being aligned with, like, you know, something exactly like Facebook, which could potentially, you know, just compromise the, like, you know, just screw up the entire deal. So yeah, Notch is out, which isn't to say that, you know, some modder won't come in and, you know, make third party Minecraft support. That was Minecraft was the game when I tried out the Oculus. That's what I played, and it was like super neat, but blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who else is doing VR, Dennis?
PlayStation is.
Sony.
Sony is. Excuse me. Yes. I don't know how surprising it is that they threw their hat in the ring. There was kind of rumblings all over the place that, you know, multiple different people were looking into this kind of VR support. But at GDC, they kind of they put it out there, and they had a prototype up. I would not be surprised if it wound up being remarkably similar to what actually gets released, because when they, you know, deployed the prototype of the Move controller, it was essentially that that yeah. wound up in the market.
Everybody laughed at it because it looked like a Bluetooth wizard.
Yeah. And then that's what you got. I kind of have this I have this suspicion that when these companies are sharing this prototype gear, we're messing around in the lab, it's like, okay, it's 90% done. Let's call it a prototype and get people yeah. excited. You know, but anyway, I mean, it doesn't seem to be meaningfully different from the Oculus Rift mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. It's just another. And I would say that the meaningful thing here is that this is establishing it not as an oddity or, you know, a novelty, which although it's probably still both of those things. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, now that multiple people are throwing their hats in the ring, it looks more probable that it'll stick around. And if it's going to stick around, people will be more probable to use it.
So I think it's cool that Sony is doing this. Like they've been invested in 3D for a little while. Like what was it, for a span of like maybe 4 years, every first party Sony game was 3D compatible on like 3D TVs. For as little as they care mm-hmm. about 3D, like that is remarkable company like unity behind that kind of initiative, right? They put out that special like 24-inch screen that was like 3D, but it was like so you could do split screen but not split screen on it. Like they've been like iterating around this for a while. My worry is like fragmentation, right? You know, like so Oculus kind of has, you know, like so Sony dominated the news cycle there for like 2 weeks. God, dominated the news cycle. What are we? like Oculus since like 2011 has been synonymous with like, oh, 3D virtual like headsets, and like Steam had their thing that they were working on, and they're like some crowdfunded stuff. But like what we're setting up for, like if Sony really like leans into this, is like a format war kind of thing where you have Blu-ray and HD DVD, you have VHS and Betamax. And like ultimately what this does is it puts a lot of like onus on the developers to support both. If they see that there is like a, like, you know, if they see that there is equal demand for both of them, right?
Yeah. Do we know anything about kind of the way that these two function? Is it truly like a PlayStation versus an Xbox, or is it like, hey, here's one brand of USB mouse and here's another brand of USB mouse?
I have absolutely no idea. Like I would assume that there would be something like appreciably different about their technology. It's kind of like, so you know how there's like Real D and like 3D and, oh, we're going to make this movie look like shit by like really dimming out the colors and making everything look like cardboard cutouts 3D, like, which could be any of those. I imagine it's going to be like kind of analogous to that, where the end result isn't appreciably different, but like different theaters and different, you know, platform holders kind of have like their, you know, they throw their hat in with a different one, which means like, oh, okay, so I don't understand why my like 3D glasses for this one thing don't work for this other thing, but the technology is just different enough that I can't benefit from it. And I didn't know I was picking a side when I bought the Sony one, because what is Oculus? I don't even know how to pronounce Oculus. You know, like, oh, yeah. You know, like this is, you know, like we're a Red Vines family, you know, we're not a Twizzler family.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it develops. I don't know. I think the one thing we're certain of is, hey, this is going to stick around. I think people were probably just getting bored with the Oculus Rift. Now that Facebook has bought it, you know, people are certainly going to be like, well, that jumped the shark. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. How do you feel, Ben?
I think I'm just really boring, because like Oculus Rift, like 3D movies, I was just like, eh, that's unnecessary. That'll never catch on.
Yeah.
Strap it to your face. Strap it to your face.
Just put it in your eyes. Yeah. No, it's man.
How will you ever be able to see this beautiful 4K resolution unless we set the screen, you know, immediately in front of your eyes?
Don't even get me started on 4K, Dennis. It doesn't solve the problem. People don't care.
Yeah, save it for the grind when we have nothing to talk about.
Yeah. So
I'll just bottle up this piss and vinegar and save it for later.
To take it.
Ew, sorry.
Ew, gross. gross. to take this back to the Oculus thing, like, you know, like, I was kind of nonplussed until I tried it at the Portland Retro Games Expo, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I could see how this could be a thing with the right experience. But there are like real logistical concerns, like, oh, like neck fatigue is an actual problem, and motion sickness is an actual problem, like all those practical concerns. But as like a technical oddity, it's hard to dismiss it as like, oh, it's neat, but that might not bear out. But like, we can't forget that like this was a Kickstarter. That there were people who gave potentially thousands of dollars to get this thing off the ground because it's something they wanted to see exist. And before it even hits consumers, to see that it's sold for billions of dollars, like, you know, we're only like a couple of years into this Kickstarter economy that popped up. But like, I didn't back the Oculus Rift, but I can't help but feel some sympathy for somebody who is like, all right, so I don't have a consumer model. Maybe I have a developer model that runs like a crazy limited like resolution or so, and I gave you a bunch of money like out of this like democratized idealistic version of what I think this new, you know, like patron economy should be. And like what I found was I was your first round of like angel investor funding for you to go off and possibly ally with a company that I am ideologically opposed to. Right.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, so I feel a little bit hypocritical here because we use Facebook, right? Like most of our, like, unless somebody writes into our email, which I encourage people to do, you know, like we use Facebook to like reach out to our fans and gather content for the show. Like it's totally a thing that we do. So when I say like ideologically opposed, like we're not strongly grossed out enough by Facebook not to recognize that like it's a place where people are. But like that is apropos of nothing. But
I think what's gross, what I don't like is I don't like Facebook crawling out of my Facebook, you know, if that makes any sense. Like Facebook, it's super big and they have bad policies around privacy and stuff. But if it's living on my webpage or on my app, okay, you know, I'm using it for what I want. It's when they start being like, hey, now we're going to be this to you. And it's like, it's like that creepy friend that keeps on trying to put their arm around you. And you're like, look, dude, we can hang out, but, you know, I don't like you that way.
Yeah.
Sorry again, Dennis.
He dismissed you so much. No, that's
fun fact. Last week we recorded. Ben just the entire time had his hand on my knee. It was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, you kept on like giving him a I don't know. I'm
my lips.
I'm real sorry that that skyline was closed.
Making kissy faces.
Oh well. Yeah. No, you're right because like you know what the agreement is, right? Like I feel like, you know, aside from the crazy, like, esoteric and arcane stuff, like, oh, like, his mouse was hovering over this word, so he must like the, you know, like, aside from the stuff that I don't know they're collecting, like, you know what the agreement is, right? But, like, I'm not an Instagram person because, I don't know, it just seems a little bit gross to me that, like, there's this, you know what, it almost feels like a proxy war for people's attention.
Sure.
Right. Hmm. Which is, you know, you have this large body that is hiding behind a smaller one, like, oh, it's Instagram. I like shooting photographs that are in a square aspect ratio that may or may not have a froofy filter over them. Like shooting
Fuck
square
rectangles.
No, it's an interest, like I like composing stuff in a square, but like I use the iPhone's like built-in square aspect ratio, like when I'm taking pictures for Twitter, you know. But just like I feel a little bit gross like feeding that directly in to the Facebook ecosystem, which is I don't know.
You know what's going to be funny is that when we, you know, our kids are going to laugh and be like, oh, grandpa, you guys are so afraid of big data. Like, remember when you guys thought it was scary that there was eye tracking?
No. It's just, it's so, again, I will talk about the technological bell curve, which I feel like I've mentioned on at least 7 episodes straight, which is your knowledge of your knowledge of technology versus your level of fear. At very low knowledge, your fear is high because that is a magical witch box that is going to steal your soul. At medium knowledge, you're kind of like, oh, this will help me, like, keep in touch with, like, high school friends and, you know, possibly, like, find a recipe or whatever. Like, cool, you don't fear it at all. But when you know more about it, like, you're infinitely afraid because you're like, oh, they're able to, with only my name, my gender, and my zip code, figure out my social security number and all of my greatest fears and possibly all of the porn that I've ever browsed. Which is like, just like fucked. It's super weird, and I feel like we're just being inured to it, and I feel like we're also boring our listeners. I feel like I'm boring everybody because I have a lot to say about
real time,
this.
The real time data that we're secretly collecting shows that about 50% of our listeners at this point have started rolling their eyes,
Okay, again, like this is in line with saying, well, okay, we acknowledge we use Facebook. I also acknowledge it's probably pretty weird for me to talk about privacy when, you know, according to calculations that I recently did, you know, we put out, let's say, 290 episodes of individual shows over the past year, you know, that accounts for something close to 24 real-time days of... You know, like it's a bunch of talking, and there's a bunch of like real, possibly like little factoids about like where, like, people can triangulate, right? And so it's weird to talk about privacy in that sense, but like there is stuff. Again, you know what the contract is. I don't say my address is dot 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 dot. You know, like it stays where it stays. Ugh.
Yeah, don't want Facebook crawling out of my Facebook.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like some kind of like J horror, you know, ghost girl. Ben, did you have a story? Or did we snake yours?
Yeah, it was the Oculus Rift one.
Okay, cool. So all about Oculus.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for multiplayer, where we talk about things that you participate with. What? So.
Pre-tape call-in show. Ha! I got to say it this time.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Do we? Oh yeah, we always reference that like every single time. Oh man. So Ben, since this was your prompt, why don't you say what we asked the nice people?
Yeah. As the question is, if you could play any video game for the first time again, what would it be and why?
And well, I assume when you give your answer, you will justify why you had us do this, because I think it's a very interesting question. But I'm going to go ahead and get us started with Rev Domes Ahis Omgamoose. Let's just say Omgamoose and call it a day. I'd say it's a three-way tie between Deus Ex, Stalker, Shadow of Chernobyl, and System Shock 2. I suppose it's not surprising that all three are so similar, mainly in being heavily atmospheric and having well-written, if not translated, Stalker, cough. I assume what he's saying here is that Stalker was not...
I like how you did an actual cough, didn't do a cough Stalker, and then said cough. Yep.
You gotta get off the fence, man. It's gotta be one way or the other.
You know what? Best of both worlds. Gotta have it all. Yeah, so what he's saying is it's well written, but not well translated in the case of Stalker. Having well written twists and turns in the stories. All three of those have well written twists and turns. While all three are still amazing games to replay, replaying them is nowhere near the same as the first time. Also, thinking about it now, all three also rely heavily on storytelling via the first-person perspective and by finding info and exploring off the beaten path, as it were. Yeah, those are all really similar games, and that is perfectly fine because I could see, like for me, the one that I have the most experience with is Deus Ex because I played that at a very vulnerable age. But I could see any of those, especially good.
You were an at-risk youth to computer games.
Yeah, I was an at-risk latchkey kid. but yeah, it's that's funny. That is funny. What am I thinking of here? Yeah, but especially with Stalker and System Shock being so horror driven, not having those you know, spoiled for you. Yeah,
I'm impressed because Shadow of Chernobyl is very, I won't say randomized, but you know, it's all got this ecosystem that kind of works together. So I got the impression that that would be, you know, playing through it twice would be very different, just because the it's not set up with like levels and layouts. It's all just kind of, hey, we're going to let this crazy ecosystem evolve and see what happens. So I'm surprised that there isn't more, not to, obviously that's a perfectly fine answer, but I'm surprised there isn't more, you know, value in going back and playing it the second time.
Yeah. That's just because it's so systemic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But again, that's the, you know, the game can be systemic without the story necessarily being systemic.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's like stuff that you notice the second time that you don't notice the first time around. That's always the case with like an interactive narrative that is like as open as that is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what's Quentin say?
Quentin says probably Halo, because I still remember hearing the music at the title screen. Oh, yeah. The grandiose nature of the Halo itself, the WTF feeling of the Flood recordings, and the heart-racing climax of the Pillar of Autumn run. All these things are now very nostalgic to me, but something Dark Souls 2 is reteaching me. Yeah, oh, wait. But something that Dark Souls 2 is reteaching me is that nothing can really recapture that feeling of something new where you haven't quite solidified your opinion of it yet. All you know is that you are enjoying the experiences you're making.
Yeah.
I like the point of, you know, not having a formed opinion yet. It's like, yeah, you can always go back and play something that you really like, but there's always this pleasant surprise when you're like, oh, hey, this is actually really good, that you can't get back.
And it reinforces your initial impression, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I've kind of got the scales off my eyes. It's no longer just you know, kind of like being impressed and wow, there actually is substance to this.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Ben, what's Jala say?
Yeah, so Jella says, I'd have to say either Shining Force or Call of Cthulhu, Dark Corners of the Earth, and here's why. While my favorite iterations of the Shining series were Shining Force 3 for Sega Saturn and Shining Force Resurrection of the Dark Dragon for Game Boy Advance Remake, the original Genesis game was actually my first RPG-like and the first game I can recall beating without my older sister stepping in to take over. I remember the time... Yeah, I remember the title music and intro sequence, while trite, spoke to my child self rather strongly. After being defeated in some battle or another, taking a break and flipping the game back on later, my eyes misted over as I wanted to do it well and save Rune. I love 1, 2, and 3 as well as the remake and play them to this day. As to Call of Cthulhu, I was introduced to that game by Watch Out for Fireballs, and although I enjoyed the snippet I played, I quickly stopped playing the part in the hotel where the fish people chase you after because I knew what was coming. I will eventually go back and play it, but knowing beforehand about the events to come takes some of the excitement out of it. Even though I was listening to Gary and Cole talk about it, was that initially piqued my interest.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
She requested that you read that, so I ordered it so you would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm inclined to, like, you know, like to say a horror game. Like, I wonder, you know, if I played Silent Hill 2 for the first time now with my current adult mentality, would I appreciate it as much? I would like to think I would. But, you know, I don't know how much of, like, what I value in games is informed by having played Silent Hill 2 and, like, acknowledging that it's one of the best games ever, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, again, you stole mine.
Damn it. That's fine. Let's breeze over that. I'll read Christopher's, and then we can do ours. But yeah, Christopher Schley on Facebook says, I have a couple because I can't just say one of anything on here. First, Gone Home. It's probably my favorite game of the decade, let alone just last year. I really dug the story and unraveling the story. wait a minute, I really undug the story and unraveling the story, and it was just so well written. And going into it thinking that there might be a horror element and that things at the end in the attic were probably going to end up very different, experiencing the story was such an amazing and fulfilling experience for me. I wish I could unremember it and do it all again. And totally unduding it out here, but the first game I've played in years that got me all feeling feelings again and kind of teary-eyed. Plus the fact that it was, nondescript spoiler, let's not spoil that. Let's say it subverted expectations. Still dealing with an uncertainty of the future, but not my mantra of, oh, I better not find blank in the attic over and over again. And secondly, a combo between Super Mario Bros. 3 and Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse. Two of my top faves from the NES years. Both of them blew my mind when I played them. Dracula's Curse, since that was my first of the series and actually the first horror game I've ever played. And God, to experience the Clock Tower level for the first time again would be amazing. And Super Mario Bros. 3. I played the other two prior. But this one was different. I wish I could go in not knowing what the different worlds were, and could possibly play out each level. I remember being scared shitless of that fucking evil, mean jerkbag son in World 2 when it started to chase me halfway through the level. So you guys got to see my Phantom mask, right?
Yeah, that is perfect placement.
Yeah, over my key hook.
What's funny is that you've got a series of key hooks and then just one specially dedicated for it.
Yeah, I have a lot of keys. You know, I have a lot of keys and several key rings because I insist on minimizing the number of keys that I carry at a given time. But there are a lot of contexts in which I need to unlock things. So the Phantom mask from Super Mario 2 hovers over my most used keys, which include my house key and my car key. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, so I'll just kind of go directly into mine, which is to say, like, I could probably like gush over like, oh, it'd be awesome to play like Mass Effect for the first time like over again, but like there are a bunch of games that I played when I was really young, right? Like, mm-hmm. Him saying Super Mario Bros. 3, like, I might even say, like, Super Mario World. Like, if I were able to play that for the first time now, I would probably learn a lot more by coming to it without, you know, having that muscle memory to it, I think. With Super Mario World being kind of, like, my favorite in the series, I think that would be a wonderful experience for me. I getting the chance to look at that for the first time. So I think that's my answer. Like, you know, outside of like any of the ones you would expect, which are like, you know, survival horror and Dark Souls, which is all that I ever am. Yeah.
and it doesn't have to be restricted to like playing it today. Like, you could think of it in terms of,
oh yeah,
it, like if your mindset again, yeah,
like so like if I could like Billy Pilgrim myself back to like when my dad got us the SNES and like sitting in that basement playing Super Mario World for like the very very first time, yeah, that would be kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So that's mine.
I'll go next.
Yeah,
since mine's already been let out, so we can build suspense for Dennis's. I hope it's spooky. I would say Silent Hill 2, mostly because the first time I played this, we played it in college dorm, my freshman year.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, which is kind of, like, it's crazy that I didn't play it before that, because I had played the first one when it came out, and, you know, I thought it was cool and everything. But, I don't want to give any spoilers, but, yeah, like, the first, like, 5 minutes – you realize that the game rules have kind of changed since the first one, and it's like pretty legitimately scary. So
you consider the first 5 minutes to be spoilers?
I don't know, man. I don't want to ruin it in case someone wants to play it now. But
okay,
yeah, but they know how to press all the right buttons, especially if you played the first game. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Silent Hill 2 remains the only Silent Hill game that I've played to completion. And I want to say the only horror game that I've played to completion. I played Resident Evil 5 all the way through, but that does not count. yeah, that might be the only one.
You did... Did you do Amnesia?
I did part of Amnesia. I've played part of a lot of horror games. Which is funny, because I think, for me, the most compelling part of horror games is always the what went wrong.
Okay.
And that's usually the reveal that comes at the end. Like, you know, usually it's, okay, what is the thing at the end that will make sense of this to some extent? And, and I very rarely get there with the horror games I play, so interesting. But yeah, Silent Hill 2 had its hooks in me deep.
Yeah, and that atmosphere probably helped it too, like experiencing it with other people. And like that was an appointment for a while in Turner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember your specific advice was play it with the lights off, and I did that for the whole thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, and I was over there when you beat it too.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So how about you? Like, what would you do over again?
Yeah, I would love to play Jack 2 for the first time again. Mm-hmm. But it's for the reason that there was a very specific set of circumstances that led up to it. So this was kind of that weird age where, you know, I didn't just know everything about every game because of the internet before it came out. Mm-hmm. And I had played and absolutely loved the first Jack game. But the first Jack game is a very straightforward platformer. You know, you run, you jump, you collect collectibles, and that's about all there is to it. Like, I love the game, tons of personality, but it's very much your classic old-fashioned 3D platformer, right? And I had no idea that there was going to be a sequel, even though I think the end of the first game kind of very overtly hints at it, but I had no idea that the sequel had come out. And just walking out of a Blockbuster one day, I caught out of the corner of my eye Jack 2. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that it existed at all. So completely was not expecting it. Was like, holy crap, you know, I love this. Bought it that right there and then brought it home to play it. And for anyone who's played the two games, Jack 2 still has that old-fashioned platformer core, but then has so much more mixed in. So it's kind of platforming levels like Jack with a GTA-style hub world where you can, you know, hijack vehicles and... you know, run around and have a lot of autonomy, and just a much greater, much more involved story. And it was just, you know, 10 times more deep and 10 times better on every single level. Yeah. And so to have that something like that just fall into my lap was an amazing experience because I had no context. I literally started playing it expecting nothing more than another, you know, original Jack game. And to have it just surpass that so far was an amazing experience. And I feel like that was a golden age, one, in terms of having information before the game came out, but then two, in terms of how much you expect out of a game. Like now, if it doesn't have some sort of RPG progression system, I'm like, well, this is bullshit. You know, like it was a genuine surprise, and I got a lot more than I was expecting.
So is it that you want to go back and play that particular game again, or are you looking for another instance where your exposure to it was just so consummately pure?
I think it's the fact that it was so pure. Like, it was just such a great coincidence that I found the game. Yeah. But then also that it was so much better in every aspect than what I was expecting.
Yeah. And so I think that this is like a function of like the mechanics of the question, because like when I say like when I think of like, oh, you know, go back and play this for the first time again, I'm assuming that some kind of like Gilligan's Island coconut amnesia mechanics are in play.
Yeah.
You know, and so like regardless of how you like first found this game, so like for me, like saying like, oh, if I was a 26-year-old grown-ass man when Super Mario World came out, you know, well, I would probably be like, you know, listening to grunge music or whatever, and you know, out there having sex with Gen X girls, as was the case in the 90s, as opposed to when I was doing that in the 2000s. really weird time in my life. So you're literally talking about like Billy Pilgriming back to like the last time that you remember experiencing something without prejudice.
I want a Groundhog Day that moment.
Yeah.
Just and again, like you said, it can be that game, it can be a totally different game, it can be not even a game, but just that experience of like, dude, this is, I was not expecting this, and every time I think it's going to be X good, it is X times 10 good.
Huh.
Or yep. 10X good, I guess. I know algebra. math is shaking his head. Ben is shaking his head.
Math is shaking about my math. His head. That's pretty good. So Ben, like you texted me this like prompt, like for me it was like the middle of the night last night.
Yeah, it was a reasonable time for me, but yes, it was not for you.
What was it that inspired you to prompt this?
Well, I never really asked questions, so the fact that I thought of one was a huge moment for me. I was thinking about The Last of Us, though, because I had watched my friend play it a couple weeks ago, and so it was interesting to see somebody else play it for the first time and kind of see how they experienced it and compare it to my own.
So. I think that's perfectly acceptable. Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for responding to that. It was a wonderful discussion. Thank you, Ben, for suggesting the topic. If you would like to participate in these, they generally go up on Tuesday afternoons, Eastern Standard Time, on facebook.com/thelevel. The Level Podcast. facebook.com/thelevelpodcast is where those go. And as always, we appreciate everybody who contributes, because it is a fun part of the show. Do you guys want to do the grind?
The grind.
You know what, you guys? We play games. I mean, you guys do.
But not
I don't.
This week.
Yeah.
Don't like.
Turning the chair around, hat turns around. Yeah. You know, just have a rap session. But this is the segment called The Grind, where we talk about what we've been grinding to a pulp here. As of recent, does anybody want to volunteer to go first? Dear God, please, somebody go.
So I actually have something. I've been playing a ton of Dark Souls 2, and it was one of those things where midweek I'm like, I should probably play something for, you know, that I want to talk about, you know, beyond just the thing that we'll be talking about for years to come, I'm sure. So I saw an article about this. It was almost my brief, but I realized since I didn't do shit for the grind, I could also turn it into my grind. And so that's what I did. So there's something called Train Jam. And I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but a bunch of developers get on a train in Chicago, Illinois, that's bound for GDC in San Francisco, California. And this is a 52-hour train ride, and they use the time, they've got 52 hours, to form teams, conceptualize an idea, and then create a game. And they just recently posted up all of the games that they created in these 52 hours to their website.
Huh.
Yeah, and so it's you know, obviously these are a bunch of like half finished, very small ideas, but they set a theme, and I went through and just played a bunch of these games to see kind of how people interpreted and did variations on this theme.
I'm picturing this being the smelliest Agatha Christie novel. just like bowel movement on the GDC Express.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the personal hygiene aside, there's some cool stuff on here. And, you know, like I said, it's these things were developed in 52 hours, so a lot of them are super unfinished. But the theme was disconnected. And it was just really interesting to see how all these people took that in different ways. So there's one game where you are an astronaut that has been disconnected from their air supply, and you have to kind of like flail through space, for lack of a better term, towards, well, what I imagine is, you know, air, but I never actually got to my objective because the controls were super difficult, and wound up suffocating before I got anywhere. But, you know, you're disconnected that way. There's a game where you are a spider mom, I imagine, and your kid is disconnecting your legs and stabbing them into your eyes.
Is that like being a tiger mom?
Yeah. Yeah, spider mom. But it's interesting because you have the idea, you know, the disconnected theme is, okay, someone's trying to disconnect your legs. But you actually have individual control of each of your eight legs and each of the joints on your eight legs. And so you can use the legs to kind of like knock away this thing that's trying to get you. But it's just one of those things where it's like, you have to remember, okay, this button does that to this leg, this button does that to this leg, and it's coming for me, and I got to, I'm pushing the wrong button. And so it's a lot of, it's what I imagine having eight legs to feel like. Like, which one am I trying to move again? So that was interesting.
So is every game just a variation on Quap and Surgeon Simulator? because both of the ones, and like two is a line is all I need to unilaterally decide what the trends are in game jams.
Everything.
Yeah.
No, there was not, because there was one called Off the Grid that I was most intrigued by and spent the most time with. And it's like it's kind of a point and click adventure game. And it starts you off, you're being dropped off by someone. They're like, hey, look, you need to stay here for 30 days. All right. Just hunker down. Here's $25. There's a town about 8 miles away. You can go into that if you for stuff you need, but try not to talk to anyone too much. And you're like, okay. And then it drives away. And so there was no context beyond that for why you were here, but clearly you're hiding out from something or someone. And so, when you're in your house, you have the option to just kill time by either watching movies or sleeping or eating, all of which increases like a boredom meter, or you can go into town, interact with people and get supplies to keep yourself fed.
Or go back and reconcile with your family and kill a drug cartel.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I didn't get far enough to actually, find out what was going on, but it was a very intriguing idea. Of the mechanic was, you're not really supposed to be interacting with people in the town, but this is an adventure game. That's what you do, is you interact with people. Like, you click through people's dialogue trees, but it was one of those things where it's this weird guessing game of, okay, what are the safe things to talk about, that won't, cause some sort of trouble. What are the things I need to stay away from? There's a policeman over there. I'm definitely not going to talk to him, et cetera, et cetera. So it was very intriguing.
So do you get the sense that you would be able to kind of figure out what it is you're in for, by kind of talking to people and seeing what you get in trouble for?
Yeah. I mean, I was very delicate about it. So for example, when you're walking into town for the first time, there's a phone booth that's ringing. And there's just a voice on the other side that says, I'm in the bar, come meet me. Mm-hmm. And so you go into the bar, and there's like, a couple different people that you could talk to, and you're not sure which of them is the person that you're supposed to be your informant or whatever. Yeah. And so it's this weird thing of trying to suss out through the dialogue tree, like, okay, are you the guy that I'm supposed to be meeting, without giving away that, like, oh, hey, I'm suspiciously looking for a contact here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which, again, super unrefined because it was done in 52 hours, but yeah, a really cool concept for a game.
It looks kind of like Super Brothers, like that pixel art style. I'm actually really, I'm really curious about this because it looks fantastic, very much is inspired by that thing I obliquely alluded to earlier.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of the game again?
Off the Grid.
Off the Grid. Yeah, go to trainjam.com and they'll all be here. It was a little imbalanced in terms of I didn't have to worry too much about my boredom meter. It was just kind of a lot of it was just eating food to kill time until I had to go back into town.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some interesting stuff going on. Then go ahead.
I thought that I was making an unfair generalization about people in general in close quarters with long-term projects. Well, not just gamers, everybody gets stinky from time to time, right? But I'm looking on their website and they have like an FAQ section, like, what about food, how in the world do I sleep on a train, and also what about hygiene, where they say that if you're in a coach ticket, you will only at best be able to take a pseudo shower, which involves giving yourself what in my family is referred to as a hoe bath in a sink, which just sounds like my own personal like Harlan Ellison level of like, just specially designed hell for me. So congratulations, everybody who... Ugh. don't even I can't sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, it's if they're able to suffer through that, there's a lot of creativity here. The one other one that I messed around with I think it was War Cry 3. It's disconnected in that just the game changes randomly for, you know, every 10 seconds or so. So it opens up and you're playing a third person shooter. And then all of a sudden that freezes into a random screen that looks like a pop-up ad. And then all of a sudden that switches into a 2D platformer. And all of a sudden, so, you know, I think they just kind of were having fun with a random idea. But it's just very clear. There's a ton of creativity there. I haven't done any of the games that are on like on Android or downloadable for a mobile device. But it's cool to see. You know, I've heard about these game jams and I've seen one or two things that have come out of them. But just to see the results posted wholesale for everyone to go check out is really interesting.
So, I would love to participate in a game jam, but like I have no talent. My core competency is like talking shit about like stuff that other people dedicate their lives to. Like I'm all talk. So
you could be the manager then.
No, I don't want to be that. That just sounds awful. That's gross. like a manager is a gross person to be. But like just like you know like just like to if there was like a 72 hour like duck jam kind of thing, like coming up with a Twine game, like with like, you know, like if I like, okay, so if it was like a like, you know, the level jam, you know, like let's put together like this, you know, text adventure Twine game over the course of like 72 hours, you know, like mm-hmm. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, like it'd be kind of cool to see what came out of that. But like That's just so unimpressive compared to like, oh, we just like totally made a graphic adventure on a train while being real smelly. Like,
yeah, it's 52 hours. If you went into it freshly showered, I have to imagine that you can get most of the way through without being too smelly.
I think that transit is inherently smelly.
That's got some truth to it.
So you know, when I flew out to Portland, that's like a 7 hour plane ride. Like I was really ripe at the end of that, you know. Yeah, I just transit is inherently smelly, but it's an awesome idea. Like just kind of like, okay, you know, it's not only the inexorable march of time that we're fighting against, but also, you know, the inexorable march of this train towards San Francisco, and by inexorable I mean as long as there is not a couch on the tracks.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I don't know. You're kind of like fucking yourself over. You're like, all right, I'm putting myself in a position where I can do nothing else except for work.
Yeah.
Because trains are boring otherwise.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you phrase it as work. I have to imagine they're doing this because it's enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's creatives and it's like self-directed indie developers. So, you know, there is a certain mindset where the thing that you do for fun is also the thing that you've made into your work, i.e. podcasts. So, yeah, I'd be lying. So like that idea of like sequestering yourself into like a place where you have no option but to work, like that, that's mm-hmm. totally a thing, Ben, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like in you know, American movie where he goes out to the airport parking lot and just like writes in his car because he has no other option, you know, because like, oh, I'm hours away from anything, and like it'd be totally cool to like rent a cabin at Red River Gorge for a week and just like take a notebook and completely figure every aspect of my life out. But
to Walden Pond it?
Not so much like Walden Pond, but like, you know, with convenience stores and liquor, which is really which is really all I need to exist. So
yeah, so this is apropos of nothing, but you sparked a thought about, you know, the making the thing you love your work and vice versa. I thought it was really interesting. My dad is a woodworker and carves like decoys. And I never realized growing up, but apparently he's like one of the foremost people in that field and, you know, is really good at it. Yeah. But in the entire time he was working, he refused to ever sell a decoy.
Really?
And yeah, and he was like, this is my fun thing. I'm incredibly passionate about it. I love doing it, and I will not generate revenue for it. And he intentionally, for whatever reason, kept it separate. And he worked as a guidance counselor and just like, you know, that was his money job, and he was passionate about that too. But this thing that he probably could have eked out a living on if he made it his full-time job. He was very intentional about, I want to keep this separate and I don't want to make any money on it. Hmm. I never completely got, but it just always struck me as very interesting.
Yeah.
And then I also saw a TED talk by the guy who does Dirty Jobs.
Micro.
I forget his name.
Yeah, Micro.
Yeah, yeah. Talked about how, he, all these people that he observes who, very obviously are not making their work their passion or making their passion their work, just seem to be so insanely, happy and fulfilled in what they do, even though they don't have any passion for pig farming or what have you.
Yeah.
But it's something that they, they found that they can make a living at, and then they put their passions elsewhere. So,
yeah,
like I said, apropos nothing, just an interesting, I never put those two things together before we were talking about them.
No, it's weird. I don't know. Like, I have a very complicated relationship with that, mm-hmm. like just because my life, up to this point has, not so much evolved or grown as like metastasized into this interlocking, interleaved, interdependent, interinterred, a collection of dependencies where, it's, just creative work either for its own sake, for an audience, or for pay. And like, switching modes isn't very hard, and often like there is very little like divide between them.
Mm-hmm.
So like everything is kind of like related, and so it's harder for me to imagine. It's easier for me to imagine doing one of them specifically, because like that's a little bit of like what I may would aim for is like, oh, a little bit more simplicity. If I could have the best of both worlds. If you have that disconnect of like, these is my work in pants, and I do my work in pants when I'm over here guidance counseling or pig farming or whatever it is. And these is my play pants where I am making something. But there's a part of me, like, I don't know if it's romantic or I don't know if it's, just kind of this vestige of an idea that I had, where it's like, oh, I actually like really value my idea of like being my own boss, which is that independent thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, he could have, eked out his living on that and, totally, answered only to his clients and answered only to the people who, wanted the thing that he was making, mm-hmm. which would be its own thing. But like, I have to say, like when we did your bachelor party, his goose nuggets, I think for lack of a better word.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Really, really tasty. And I would not have imagined myself eating hand shot goose.
Oh yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah, no, it was very tasty.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said about the kind of my work pants and my play pants. Like even if what you're passionate about or your great passion in life is the thing that you're making money off of, that's fine. I think everyone needs that thing that is purely a play pants thing,
Yeah.
Where it's, this is my thing that this is purely play, and I will, it doesn't have to be, specifically related to the main passion in your life or whatever, but there's just some area of your life that is, this is purely for fun.
I suppose. Yeah. I guess any resistance or friction that I have there is just that, over the past, let's say 4 years, ever since I like graduated from college, everything has been a concerted effort to direct everything into something that is constructive towards some kind of concrete goal. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't just play games anymore. Right. Like, mm-hmm. and for, for all of my life leading up to that point, that was something that I did entirely for myself, for me to unwind. But like, I saw that as an opportunity to turn it into a way to create meaningless blather for people who had enough free time to listen. Right. And so like everything, I talk about books I read. I talk about, God knows, at the beginning of this, talking about my love for Mel Brooks, right? Like talking about movies, like you like
books and Brooks,
Well, Books and Brooks. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, so like all of that kind of turns into something that I can repurpose for some other area. And like for my work that I do, like actual like work, like, you know, job pays the rent, pays for, you know, the ability for me to have the free time to do this, you know, whole podcast thing. Like everything that I consume goes back into that too, right? Like, you know, like the pop culture and the ability to reference narrative and just kind of like the understanding and just like general life experience. I see it all as this holistic thing that feeds into every other aspect of it. And so like, you know, like the ways that I invest my time, there are, you know, direct corollaries to how that benefits either, you know, the work that I do for Epifio or the work that I do for Duckfeed or just in general. So it's so directly interconnected. And like the friction there is probably me saying like, oh, is this a healthy way to live? I'm not entirely sure. So, yeah, I don't know. Am I just blathering? Does that make any sense at all? Or is it just too much?
I think we should start calling our podcast Duck Jam, like our weekly Duck Jam.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I can get behind that. Like, so the ducks, you know, decoys, blinds, I think it all feeds back somehow. There are connections. I just need some more index cards to figure it out. Dennis, you're very silent.
Maybe he got cut off.
It's quite possible he did. Oh, he totally did.
There was no one to talk to, Cole. It was just me, and I don't talk. So sorry, bro.
Let's get him back on here.
Yeah, I that was like the worst possible moment for the call to drop.
When did it drop?
It dropped. You said so. You don't just play games anymore. And up until that point in your life, it was something that you had done just for fun.
Like I had a whole like I composed a whole essay, Dennis. It was like all there.
It went blank. I was like, well, shit.
Yeah, no. So, okay. So in four sentences.
I don't mean to go off on a rant here.
Oh, don't compare me to him. No. So, okay. So in four sentences or less, it was, I don't just play games to play games anymore. What that does is any kind of experience that I have, narrative or otherwise, kind of links back into a broader, you know, knowledge base that I draw from in order to do, you know, whatever modicum of creative work that I do. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a healthy balance to strike where there is very little barrier between leisure activity and stuff that serves a purpose for bettering this kind of accidental art that I, you know, am pretentiously leading my life into. And, oh, God, I feel like such a douche for even saying that.
No, it's actually a really interesting thing because whereas, like, you know, for example, like, okay, my dad had a very specific area. Like I carve ducks, I make wooden decoys. And it's like, you can very specifically say, okay, here is the area that is related to wooden decoys. And here is the area that is not related to wooden decoys. For you, it's like, hey, anything can be fodder for like a conversation on a podcast. Anything can be inspiration for something creative that you're doing, whether it's a video for work or, you know, something on one of these shows or anything like that. Like, those lines are very blurred.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that like just, you know, like the journey to adulthood for a lot of people, you know, it differs, right? And for me, my biggest struggle and something that like I measure my maturity through, whatever maturity I have, is that acceptance of ambiguity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? And so like you know, just that that ambiguity has marked my like, you know, 20, let's say 23 to 26 years. And like now I'm entering this phase where I have to like decide if there is a border at all. And if there is, what those borders are.
Interesting. Yeah. That's like your dentistry, your personal philosophy, but that mirrors very much kind of the way people understand moral things. Cause I think a lot of people start out with, okay, everything is black and white. And then they go to, well, no, everything is a shade of gray. And then you come to this, it's like almost the happy medium of the mediums where it's like, okay, well, most things are gray, but there are a couple black and whites in there. And I'm okay with that. I'm not always going to be sure, you know, where those lines are.
Yeah.
Interesting. At some point, we got way away from the podcast, but I kind of like I said, I need a night like this to realize this is awesome.
No, I think it's it all stems to BO on a train.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Can you imagine coding on a MacBook Air on a tiny little train compartment? Oh dear Lord.
Yeah, I just imagine the Men in Black at the end where it zooms out and they're in a locker that's in a marble that's in some alien. It's it all zooms out and we're in some deodorant molecule on a programmer's.
And I don't mean to stink shame. It is totally a part. It's totally a function of the human body. I think that it's not the people who are at fault. It is the situation where running water is at a premium, where space is at a premium, and where time is at a premium. It just totally seems anathema to the way that I've aligned my life.
If you're going to experience life to the fullest, you're gonna get gross every now and again.
I said, fuck it, live life to the hilt.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go, grip it and rip it.
So is it all trained?
I don't even know what I'm referencing anymore.
Oh, that is what you signed up for all those years ago, Dennis. So is it all Train Jam the whole way down?
It is all Train Jam the whole way down, plus Dark Souls 2, but that is, I Train Jammed this week.
Yeah, all right, cool. Ben, how about you?
I Train Jammed all week, and now I need a shower. I have nothing because I went to Cincinnati last week and did not bring my console with me.
How in the hell have we done 2 hours of podcast with no games? Oh, wait, it's because no I content. Can't stop talking.
It's all filled. Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. I mean, it was nice having you. I mean, I don't know if so we said it at the top of the episode, but I don't know if listeners appreciate kind of how rare that is for, for all of us to be in the same room. I felt that it brought a special energy, and I felt that we were all kind of enriched by being able to have kind of a miniature summit in the same room, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was good, except for Ben's hand on my knee. It was good.
a little bit. So
and my cold stare.
I feel like a little bit of a heel for not opting to go to Skyline for you, but I'm a little bit vindicated by the fact that Skyline is not open after 12 a.m.
Super closed.
Yeah. It's like as closed as can be.
Yeah.
So that's too bad. Were you able to enjoy any Cincinnati delicacies before you departed back for your strange locales, Ben?
I was, but I didn't get the go-to staples. So I didn't get any La Rosa's. I didn't get any Skyline. Sadly, I did not get any Adriatico's.
Oh, shit.
You did not get any. Yeah, well, Adriatico. On the Skyline side, you did not get any diarrhea. And on the Adriatico side, you didn't get any constipation. But
see, if I had both, it would just balance one another out. No problem.
So what you're proposing is some kind of unholy merger with Adriatico's pizza with Skyline chili on top of it.
Well, you just it's like a chaser. It's like a meal chaser. So you have your Adriatico's first, then the Skyline.
And you just take a shot of awful meat sauce.
Oh, I can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it when we get hyper local. So Ben, did you get a chance to stop by the campus? Because it's wicked changed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was able to see that over winter break.
Okay.
So yeah. I'm familiar with the update.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went there for a date a couple months ago, and it was okay, so there are places to park now, which is weird. And also this crazy 42 tap beer pub.
Yeah.
It was the Brass Tap or something like that. UC is really it's different now, and I don't know if I like it, strictly because Papadino's is no longer there with their bacon cheese fries. Ben, I have to say that you introduced a new thought technology to me with the crisp cut, or as I refer to them, the waffle cut fries. And on the cheese fries. For the short time that I was within the vicinity of that awful drunk food place, changing from the crinkle cut to the waffle cut seasoned fries for my cheese fries was thumbs up. Although I was very frustrated by how much I had to stipulate, no, not mozzarella, cheddar crisp cut cheese fries. You try and foist that mozzarella shit on me, I'm going to be very upset.
See, the thing is, it's likely that your waiter is as drunk as you are. So you got to be very, very clear on what you want.
Walking distance. I can't tell you how many nights it was like, okay, 240s of old English, no problem. 4 hours of Rock Band, no problem. Let's finish it out with like 1,500 calories. Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. I went on campus the other day. It was a whole like 45 minutes before I got shot at. Just the place has changed. Yeah.
Gentrification.
Dorm rooms don't get shot anymore there.
That was Chris. So that bullet came from Coryville, right? So we're just going like as local as can possibly be.
Yeah, I know.
So we went from like a city to a neighborhood to a window. Oh man,
that window, you guys. Am I right?
That window, man. I don't know. It's crazy.
That's classic window.
Everything changed. Everything changed. Classic window.
Classic window.
I don't know. So I like the only thing I've played is Dark Souls, honestly, and. People don't want to hear me talk about that. Like, not here. Like,
clearly they do.
What's that?
Bonfireside chat.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's like a whole show there. Like, so I feel bad like biting my own steez, but like it's super good. So Dennis, I just have to ask. Like, can you give me a status update?
Yeah. So I'm not sure I'm doing everything in the right order, but that's the great thing about Dark Souls.
Yeah, there's no right order.
Yeah. I've gotten through the place that was in the demo and the area after that. So I think I'm in the Earthen Tower.
Oh, Earthen Peak, yeah.
Earthen Peak, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just got to there. I think that's the main thing. I also discovered it's, you know, one of those little sidelines. It took me forever to unpetrify the thing. Mm-hmm. That kind of gated area, and I finally got back around to it.
Okay.
And just kind of messed around with the whole area back there.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure when in the whole. It seemed to be relatively small, all told.
Yeah.
But who knows what I'm missing there? There's a lot of areas back there that are gated right now that I'm sure I just need the right items to get back through. So
yeah.
I'm loving every second of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, I was gonna say I've been more active with the multiplayer than I have. Like I don't think I ever co-opt in Dark Souls, save for one or two very specific instances, and I've done a whole bunch of sunburrowing in Dark Souls 2, and it's just a fantastic time. I've also done my first true invading, which is a rush. I'm 2 for 3, so that's that's good.
Are you part of that covenant, or are you?
No, I'm just doing random invading on the side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You texted me about that, and it's like it has like co-oping always been this lucrative, and like kinda yeah, but mm-hmm. but like the fact that they changed the server architecture and now there's like it's more dependable that you can actually see stuff. Like you get summoned right away.
And, there's no lag whatsoever. It's just put down a sign and off you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I found myself like, oh, I'll drop a sub inside and like go change to another episode of this podcast and like, you know, just I'll dust this table in the meantime. And it's like, whoa, boss fight.
Yeah.
But more so than in either of the two games, I found myself even before I beat the boss, like, oh, I'm like running up into a wall. I need some practice. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to drop my summon sign and like fight this a bunch of time, get some souls, get some experience with the patterns on this boss, and just like,
oh, okay,
yeah.
So
yeah.
you used it before you'd beaten the boss.
Yes,
I felt so mad because I hit a huge difficulty wall just like everyone on Ornstein and Smough in the first game. And finally, you know, put down a summon sign, got in, and beat the boss. And I was like, oh, thank God I finally did it. And then it didn't count. I was like,
yeah,
no!
Yeah.
What the hell?
You have to know what the contract is, right?
Yeah, I did. That was the worst possible way to find that out. Frustration upon frustration. But it's almost a thing where I'm over the frustration curve with Dark Souls. Like, you know, I've gotten past thinking it should be something it's not, and now it's just when I'm really butting my head up against something, or I'm really having a lot of trouble, it's like, okay, yeah, this is, you know, I can still have fun doing this, even though I'm not making a bunch of quote unquote progress as defined a certain way. And I can look at it as a puzzle, and I can just enjoy the experience of playing the game. And so that's made just the whole Dark Souls 2 experience that much better.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that notion of progress, what I interrupted you to say is that, like, it's so weirdly structured, because, like, it's meant to be grazed. Like, it's meant to go from area to area to area, like, in a way that I think Demon's Souls expressly was. You know, it's like, okay, 4-1, 5-1, 2-1, 3-1, or whatever. Like, you just went for whatever was, like, the path of least resistance. And, you know, you went until you got frustrated and went somewhere else. It's like that, except without the, you know, like, structure that's built around, like, we acknowledge that, you know, the order of these doesn't matter so much. So, like, it's a big cohesive world, but you're expected to kind of, like, dip in and dip out at will.
Yeah, and it lends to the great feeling of, like, am I supposed to be here? And, you know, so that, and because of that, you then are expecting a challenge around every curve. And there's, you know, at no point are you taking it for granted, because you're never sure at what point you are getting out of your depth.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm happy you like it, just because there's been, like, some minor backlash just on people, but, like, I genuinely feel like it is an improvement.
Yeah. And I'm already getting insight from the Bonfireside chat. So for some reason I missed Leningrast, or whatever his name is. Leningrad. Before
Leningrad.
Yeah. Whatever his name is, the blacksmith. I missed him before I opened his door.
Oh yeah.
So I never saw him. And just listening to you guys talk about it, and Gary being like, "Dude, you can literally fall into your house through a window right now." I was like, "Oh, that's great." So yeah, it's good times.
Yeah. So that's really all I've been playing, and that, like, that kind of falls under, like, network business, which is a bunch of other stuff. Like, I hate, like, first world problems or white world problems or white world problems, or, like, boo-hoo, you're real busy because you decided to do this, like, whole other job after your actual job. You know, like, you can totally just, like, disappear, stop doing these shows, like, go to Ecuador and just, like, live out your life in peace. But, like, here you are, boo-hoo, sorry. But, like, I was like, no, just like it's, you know, I've just been real busy trying to get, like, caught up on stuff. And, like, I posted this thing on Twitter, which is, like, I found this script for OmniFocus, which is, like, oh, I can, like, totally, like, automate the like, recurring tasks. So, like, program.
I saw that.
Yeah. Like, programming recurring tasks with, like, variables and stuff to be like, all right, so I press this button, I put in what episode number it is and when it releases, and it generates the tasks that I need to do on which day. Because right now, it's all a bunch of stuff that needs to happen at once.
Yeah.
And there needs to be some sanity that happens somewhere. So that's been the past couple of days, is trying to get right with my system and meet my commitments, which I have been failing at. So,
well, you never have to apologize for not playing games for this show, because clearly it has no impact on our ability to do a good podcast.
To generate content. It doesn't even matter. We're just here, like, you know, just, like, messing around.
Oh, you thought it was about video games. No, just for people who love video
exactly.
games. Like, not necessarily about video games.
Doesn't mean they love it enough to talk about it or play them, but they just love them.
Let's just equivocate our way around that one. Yeah. Do you guys want to button it up?
I think so.
Okay. So that was episode number 55 of The Level. Thank you so much for listening to that rambling, meandering mess of things that had no relation to video games whatsoever.
I think we broke the promise of the first episode title.
Oh, we talked about Oculus. That has something to do with games for now.
Mm-hmm.
I love that sassy ooh-hoo. Can you give that to me again?
No, I'm not gonna do it. Sorry.
that's gonna become the ringtone for men.
Pretty good. Oh, yeah. So thank you for sticking around for that. Yeah, it's a little slice of life sometimes, right? It's like it's like boutique indie graphic novels. It's just about dudes talking about shit. So what can you do? Well, as we mentioned before, we have the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. iTunes really helps us out. It's been a little bit since we had a review. So go to iTunes and leave us one of those, a rating or review. And that helps us rise in rankings and such. If you are of the iTunes persuasion, which I know not all of you are, I don't need to hear about it. So don't tell me about how you don't use iTunes. I know. It helps anyway. But regardless, there are other shows on the network. I assure you, Hex Crank is not dead. As I mentioned, I am just way behind on every other fucking thing. So, and writing those articles takes a very long time. If you haven't noticed, they are 3,000 words long.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, hey, since we're talking about things that people might wonder if they're dead without even ever starting.
So I was going to ask you about that because, like, I totally dropped the ball in, like, helping you out with that. So go ahead.
No, so I haven't included you on any of the emails, but I've got a designer friend who I'd reached out to a long time ago, and she was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to help you with the Lego. And I sent her the image of what I was thinking about and blah, blah, blah. And then just I haven't heard back from her. And I'm trying to decide what the appropriate amount of time to wait before following up is when you're asking someone for a favor.
Okay. Like,
you know, there's a weird social etiquette there. But anyway.
Yeah. If it's me, it's 6 months. So
exactly. Yeah. It's like, hey, you're on your deathbed and I don't want to bother you, but you told me you would do this and it's totally fine if you can. I just want to, but no. So the first several articles for, the Dadding, the blog I'm going to start up are written, which is good because they're, you know, I started writing it before we were telling anyone we were pregnant, et cetera. So they'll be backdated. They'll be kind of a nice complement of articles to start.
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting on some visual identity before I get that out there. But hopefully it takes the attitude of being a very, you know, low stress kind of blog. It should be a lot of fun. I've had a ton of fun musing so far, and and hopefully more people will get to see that soon. So keep an eye out as soon as I have the right image to start the blog or the right title card, I guess.
Yeah,
it'll be out there.
The right logo slash banner is what we're looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and it is heavily based on the idea that you sent over. So it is, I liked that a lot. So
yeah, cool.
You guys, hopefully we'll see it soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll do a blast across the network too, when that happens. And, and yeah, it's just, it's like, it's really hard keeping up with the audio stuff anyway. So it's just one of those things, like writing and visuals. But yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dennis, for your patience with me and my inability to manage the network. And also thank you, listeners, for putting up with not seeing a Hex Crank article in like a month and a half. Oh, well, I assure you I'm getting better. So yeah, I've read at least the one that you have up there right now. And yeah, I think that is valuable insight as our audience grows with us. Other shows.
You derailed on blogs. Yeah, there are other. I think we said there are other shows, then we spent the entire time talking about blogs. So
yeah,
check out all the other shows.
Yeah, do it. Specifically, Abject Suffering. That's the one that I always think needs more love. Everything else kind of resolves of its own momentum. But if I'm going to mention one and not go through the entire roll call, that is the one that I want everybody to pay attention to.
If you what game was it? If you liked the vibe of this episode, where we're just like, not about video games today. What was he did that on Abject Suffering, didn't you?
Yeah. So what was the name? A listener, Brian, recommended King of Dragons. Yeah. And we talked about it for 10 minutes. Decided, this is like a stripped down SNES version of the D&D arcade games. And then we decided to talk about thrifting and Twilight. So that's about the level of dedication and discipline you can expect on that show. So anyway, and if you would like to support the network monetarily, you don't have to do anything extra. Just go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar. And if you're going to be picking stuff up on Amazon, buy it through that link and we get a little cut, which helps keep the lights on. Did I miss anything, fellas?
I think we're good.
Cool.
Whatever this was, I think we're at the end of it.
whatever it was, our national nightmare is almost over. So I've been Cole Ross, your host, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter.
Ben Merkel, at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening, and welcome to the cradle of my bailiwick. Good night. Do you guys want to go ahead and get started?
Yeah.
Cool. Let us have some fun with some jokes about video games. Can I get a hell yeah? I'm sorry.
I was ready for like a David, we gotta have that blank spot when we start.
Hoorah!
We had somebody at work today go, what did the Marines say? Hoo-ah? Hoo-ah? I was like, okay, if you say hoo-ah in front of a Marine, they'll punch you twice. A, for not knowing that it's oorah, and B, for confusing them for the sound that Al Pacino makes in Scent of a Woman.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is, man, the Marines must not be Al Pacino fans.
Oh, it's so nice. Like,
she's got a great ass.
It's so nice when I can identify the outro, like the Easter egg, before we even record. Like, usually I skim through it, but like, there, marker.